Hi, everybody. This is Nancy Miller for My Creative Life, the podcast about creatives, how and why they make the work that they do. Today, my special guest is Kelly Reich Schmidt. Kelly is an advocate for girls in STEM and business, combining a love of writing and her STEM background. Kelly creates books to inspire the next generation of leaders and innovators. Kelly is the author of I Ship, A Container Ship's Colossal Journey, published by Lerner Books. Hi, Kelly. How are you doing today?
Hi, Nancy. I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is my honor and my pleasure. And a little backstory for those who are listening. A actual guest, Carolyn B. Frazier, said, you know who you should interview? You should interview Kelly. And so that's why I reached out, because I adore Carolyn, her writing. She's just a wonderful nonfiction author. And yeah, so I was like, can't go wrong with that.
Yes. Well, thank you to Carolyn. Her books are amazing. And we definitely have some overlap in a little bit of our STEM topic coverage and lyricism, too, I think. So I've known her a long time and I appreciate that. It's just a great way to learn about how different writers create and think. So it's always fun.
Well, I would love to learn more about, I've read, of course, on your website, but I know the audience that is listening, and I know there's so many other little nuances to your story. What inspired you to become a writer?
So it's funny. I recently received from my parents this amazing treasure trove portfolio of all my art from childhood. They sold their house that they lived in for over 30 years and gave each one of us this giant portfolio. The portfolio itself didn't really last. It was kind of falling apart. But all of my stuff in there from as early as, I think, kindergarten, a lot of things that they chose to save are in there. And it's funny because I haven't even finished going through it. And I've already found 5 books that I wrote from when I was really little. So the earliest one I found so far was from 3rd grade. And my school had this really cool thing that was like this bookmaker lab where you made a physical book. So you would write it out. And when you were younger, you hand wrote it. When you were older, you got to type it. And then you would bind the book and everything. So there was cardboard, and then you got to decorate it with fabric. And then you used the puffy paint pens, which were so cool in the 90s, to write out your title. And so I read through some of them. And it seems like I've always wanted to do this, even though I had some other paths along the way. It was really interesting going back and seeing some of that from even when I was really, really young. So I found one that was The Great Sleepover, and it was about me and fictional. I have siblings, but it was fictional siblings in addition to my regular siblings. And it was aliens came to our door during a sleepover. So I've always been and also when I was younger, I would tell bedtime stories to my siblings. I'm the oldest of 4 children. So I think that I always had this desire to tell stories, and I just never really let go over many years. And I didn't really seriously start pursuing it until maybe about 10 to 12 years ago.
But you also mentioned you'd had some other careers, which I found fascinating because it's kind of like, I'm not even sure what that is, but it sounds interesting. So because of your career path, it sounded like it leveraged into the STEM topics that you were writing about. Like, I didn't know it was like the title of like an energy, like I think consultant or something along those lines.
Yes. So when I went to undergrad, I always loved English and writing. So I focused on English as one of my majors. And then at one point I got sick and I had too many majors. And so I dropped that one because I told myself, oh, I'm good at writing. I'll always be good. So, you know, it's typical, right? Like you put your art to the side to try and do something that's going to make you money. So I studied finance and I ended up landing in this world that I'd never really heard of by happenstance. I went to an event where I ended up being part of a program where you learn to become an energy trader. So I did a 3-year rotational program and I got to do all these different jobs learning from traders about how it works. But essentially trading when it comes to energy, and this actually really relates to my second book coming out next year, which actually was written first, but is the idea of someone needs something and someone has something that they're looking to sell, and finding those mutually beneficial interchange points where you might have too much of something and someone might have not enough of something. And so learning about how that works in an international sense is really cool. And I knew in that first job, that's part of how I got inspired to write iShip, is I'd always wanted to write something about shipping because I dealt with it in my job. I helped track movements of fuel around the world to help understand how much was going to be coming into the United States or being used in the United States in any given week. And so I knew from following these ships, there's these location services things, kind of like if you were to use a Find My Phone app, they have those in ships that you can use to see where they are. So I had this computer software that was literally like an image of the globe that you would track the ships all over the world. And so I did that in for two different product groups. And I thought, wow, kids would really think this was cool. So when I started writing, I had this in the back of my mind. And it took me so long to figure out exactly how I wanted to do it. But eventually it turned into iShip after many iterations. But I think that I worked in an area, like you mentioned, in that field of trading, there were very few women. And when I did it, there were no other girls in my program. There were no female traders in the Chicago office that I had worked in. And I just knew, hey, I wanted to write for kids. But now I was like, hey, I have my audience. I have people that I want to inspire to be excited and want to have other women around them in these different fields where their minds and different way of thinking can really contribute something. And I was lucky enough to have a company that was looking for that too. And they wanted me to be a part of it. And so I wanted to help foster that in other kids. And so I try to inject that into all my writing. But yes, the journey of the container ship had many elements that factored into it. But that experience that I had through tracking the ships, and then later I helped schedule them, which is like handling all the logistics. So when I did that, I just knew, hey, this is going to be a picture book someday. I'm not sure how. it's just funny in creatives' lives how you make a mental note of something and you just keep at it until you find the right way to tell that story.
That's fascinating. I find it just inspiring listening to the topic. I was just like, wow, I want to learn more. See, where I live in Savannah, we have the ports, and it's one of those things that you can watch off of any of the beach areas, like in Tybee. You see them coming in. So when I saw the cover of your book, iShip, I was like, that's like standing on Tybee Island and watching a shipping container come in. And some of my high school students that I taught, they taught me about, like, I didn't even know there was this profession. Like, you can be a sea captain, and they have certain people, like, actual trained, they go to college for this, and they train to actually, because the person who ships or pilots those shipping containers, it's not the same person who brings them into the port, because each port is different, and so there's always little things that you need to be aware of. So they'll have a sea captain who then gets on that ship and then directs it into the port. I mean, it's fascinating that there is this, you know, it could be part of this is part of a lot of people's everyday lives, because we need things that get transported all over the world. And we just never really understand, like, how it gets there. And I just was like, oh, her book is delightful. The way, you know, you're explaining things, I'm like, it's a hard concept. And then to take it down to a level that young readers can get excited about and really learn from it, that's fantastic, Kelly.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. That was really a goal of mine. And I actually worked with a person who, he's not a captain, but he's a merchant marine. So he went to one of the U.S. academies for it. And he actually lives not too far from you. He lives in Charleston, which is another big place that the U.S. people are based. And so once I knew I was writing the book and I already had a contract, I reached out to him. And his name is Brian Boyle, and he has this amazing YouTube channel. So I'd gone through all these videos because I'm thinking, okay, I've never been on a container ship. How am I going to write this book? And I just felt immersed because he works on these ships and he took all these amazing videos with a drone, and he would do them out at sea. And he did all these explanatory ones as well. Well, he would go through, this is what you do in this job, and this is what you do here. And so I ended up emailing him, and he was super receptive, and he helped us through the whole process. He, because this book is not nonfiction, but it is heavily informational fiction, and my editor, Carol Hintz at Lerner, wanted it to feel as close to nonfiction as possible. So on my side, and I didn't realize this until I had done it, at least with Lerner, the way it worked was I did a lot of the research that went into the art. And I think this varies by illustrator. I think it varies by publisher. But in my case, I had like extensive notes were given, and that was at the request of the publisher for how to make things accurate. And Ryan factored into that. So we actually had tons of back and forth where I would get the sketches and then the different rounds of art where he would go through and say, oh, this is right. Or, hey, you need to change this. And he actually, you know, redlined a couple things that the angle looked wrong and things like that from an art perspective. And it was just extremely helpful, I think, to make this book really come to life. And the illustrator of this book actually was selected for the original art show by the Society of Illustrators in New York. And I think it's from a combination of her playful style, and I just think she really brought everything to life. So her name is Jam Dong, and she's just incredible. but yes, so it's a very fascinating world. And at the end of the day, I think that it really, these ships are so important in our everyday lives, and no one even knows it. So I like writing books where I think adults can learn something too, because picture books are for everyone. But particularly the multi-layered books, I think, is something that I really like to do. And all the books that I have under contract or forthcoming, they all are like that. So I like to try and have a really great story and something for kids, and have some element of back matter for kids and other things where adults can really learn a lot from it as well. And in this case, it varies on the estimates, but at least 80% of the world's global trade is happening via container ships. And so when I've just done a few school visits so far, because this is my first book, but I tell kids, like, you are wearing, or you have eaten, or you have touched something today that came on one of these vessels to the United States. Unless you live on a homestead or you're really remote, it's pretty hard not to have things that have come from other countries in this global world. So it's pretty cool to think about what a small part we are in this massive world, which is also one of the themes of the book. So
fantastic. I think it's wonderful. And I was going to ask you about the Society of Illustrators original show. That's a huge honor. I saw actually on their Instagram, they'd posted some of the art from iShip, and I was like, oh, they turned out gorgeous. And that is like a true marriage of, like, you know, with picture books, the beautiful, wonderful writing that authors do, which illustrators could not. Some illustrators give pushback on this because they're like, oh, we do. But I go, like, you can't have the pictures unless you have those beautiful words. And a lot of times, as I've been analyzing picture books, just hearing the beauty and how specific the words are. And I, you know, the author has mindfully pick these words to, you know, give that emotional impact of the story, whatever story they're telling. And it's delightful, because, like, I think of, a little off tangent, but like early people, before there was, you know, we were living in tribes or whatever, you know, stories were just words that were spoken, and you would act them out probably around a campfire, you know, that early part of that storytelling that, you know, we produce some of those images in our head. So I truly give it up to authors, what they do and the amount of work it takes to create a story that has gone from probably thousands and thousands of words down to that minimal level to be read to a young audience. It's really hard. So I commend you, Kelly, for doing it. And then on multiple books. And this leads into my next question, not so much what iFuel is about, but I'm wondering what you learn from doing the iShip. How has that changed, like, your future forthcoming books? Like, when you went to write those, did you change the way you do your writing process, or you've kind of nailed it down? I'm curious about that.
So it's really interesting, actually. I can still answer this question, but I actually wrote iFuel first. So because I mentioned I was in the energy industry, I'd been wanting to write about that and the shipping book for a long time. And the iFuel book came about because I couldn't figure it out. I mean, explaining how oil works and energy, it's very complicated, and it touches on a lot of subjects, like it deals with geology and a lot of different things. And so it actually took doing Vivian Kirkfield's 50 Precious Words contest for me to say, hey, whoa, what if I try and write this from the perspective of, in first person, from the perspective of oil in the case of iFuel? And that was the start of that manuscript. So trying to only use 50 words was amazing for me with a complicated topic, because it kind of like how some people who are poets say the poetry actually helps them because they are very limited in the words they can choose. It helped me find ways to explain a complicated topic for kids. And so once I distilled that, I think iFuel, it's definitely shorter than iShip, but I think it's still like maybe under, it might be under 300 words. And it is a 40-page picture book, and it explains oil from millions of years ago when it starts as a little microscopic speck, and it goes all the way and includes alternative energy. But it's, I don't know the final word count, actually. I probably should check that. But so I think actually that act of writing that created new processes for me to try and really make like every single word count, and to really, really be really harsh in revision to say, you know what, I don't need that, or there's a better way to say that. And so I think that it has created a bit of a style for me that has now, so the learner books are, as of now, there's going to be 4 books, three of which are written. Thank you. I'm excited. So 3 of which are written, and 4th one, we haven't figured out what it's going to be yet. But yes, I think that once you find a way that you really enjoy storytelling for certain types of stories, then you can build upon that. And it's interesting because iShip sold first. So they sold as a 2-book deal, but they wanted to release iShip first. And my critique partners loved what I'd done with iFuel. And there was a kids mentorship, kid-lit writing mentorship contest that I had entered in, and I got to be mentored by Hannah Holt, who's amazing, an author, and we worked on iFuel. So iFuel was really, really in good shape. And then I had this idea to write a story about a container ship in 2021 after the Suez Canal crisis, where the container ship, the Ever Given, got stuck in the canal. And I was like, hey, that's my story. I can write about that ship. And so that was the original story I wrote as iShip, was all right after that happened. I wrote it, and my critique partner said, hey, wait, no, you need to write this like iFuel and write it from the perspective of the ship. So I rewrote the whole story in first person. And at the time, it was all just about if the container ship got stuck. And that scene is still in the story as one of the 3 try obstacles that it goes through. But my editor saw it in a conference I went to, and gave me an R&R and said, I want you to make it a general book about shipping, because I think it'll be more timeless. And, you know, people might not remember this incident in a few years. So it was already in first person, but I rewrote it as a general book. So it is interesting because I had to go back and draw on the process I used in writing iFuel, a different kind of journey over a much longer period of time, but everything still applied. So those of you learning to write, it'll all come in handy one day, everything that you learn to do. So yes, it's been a journey to publication, just like is the journey in the 2 books that I have announced so far.
Well, but you're knocking it out of the ballpark, Kelly. That is fantastic. That is such perseverance. Like, I think sometimes because of, especially with social media nowadays, we see all these highlights and reels of everybody's work, and but the amount of effort and the research, the, you know, first person knowledge that you have of being a part of that industry, I think it helps with the story, right? All of that. And oh, yeah, I know for certain. I mean, that took years. Like, you couldn't have had without the experience that you had in energy, then to, you know, it's like those building blocks, like you needed to have that in order to have the idea for that and so forth. And like, I think sometimes people think, oh, they just banged that out and just wrote that in a week. No, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a picture book, but it's like, there's years of like the experience. Cause I tell people, like, there's this part of, and this comes from illustration, like, you just want to focus on, love it so much, I just want to do it over and over again. But if you don't live life, how do you create the work that tells stories? Like, you have to draw on something to be able to really communicate those feelings and emotions that make a great story. So that's fantastic. I think this is awesome.
Thank you. Well, it's funny, the title of your podcast is My Creative Life. And so I feel like as people who are creators, you just have to find ways to absorb the moments in your life that are worth telling stories about and to live them. You know, it's hard in this age of social media, right? So many people, I wasn't even really on it very much until I felt like I wanted to, for being able to have a presence for promoting books that I knew were going to be coming out. But it's hard. I think people try to capture what's happening rather than living what's happening sometimes. And I think that by living through it and reflecting back on what you remember and what that emotion was that you got from that experience, especially with, I have three young children, when you can go back, it's like, that's the element in a picture book that you need to have that heart. You need to have that single emotion, or sometimes more than one emotion, that is really pulling you from that experience, whether you're going on a walk outside or playing or whatever you're doing. Like, every story and every person is going to come away with an emotional reaction to a given experience. And I think that's part of being a creator for children, is trying to live your experiences and reflect on them to be able to capture that.
Well, that's wonderful advice. I mean, it's so clear in the way you talk about your content and the heart and the, you know, the, just what you put into it. I mean, it's fantastic. And I know those of you who are listening, I was on Kelly's Instagram and I saw the adorable, oh my goodness, you had a little captain's hat on. You're reading this story. It just looks so cute with the presentation, with I Ship, with the kids listening. And I'm sure they loved it. It must have been a blast.
Yes, school visits are probably not for everyone, but I'm an extrovert, which is a bit of an outlier in the writing world, at least. I feel like a lot of writers are introverts. So I enjoyed it, but it was tricky because my youngest son is only 4 months old. So when iShip came out, he was 6 weeks old, and books take a long time to create, people that don't know. So this scheduled date for the book coming out came long before I knew it was going to be having a baby 6 weeks prior. So it was just a lot. So I don't necessarily recommend doing school visits with a 2 month old. But it was a great experience. And the kids really are so, one tenet of my writing is that I really believe that children are so much more capable than grownups often give them credit for. And I really saw that with the school visits for this book, the questions kids were asking. And when I talked to the fourth and fifth graders, the presentation was a little bit more about international trade rather than the bookmaking experience. And just the jumping off points that this book has launched for kids to be able to really think about their place in the world and their part of a global economy was pretty amazing. So, I mean, the kids inspire me every day. And that's why I do it. So
wonderful. Now, because you have a full life as an author, you have a young family, how do you manage that work-life balance? Do you have any tips?
Yes, I do have a few tips. I mean, I'm by no means an expert. I try. But I think that you really have to try and find, and this applies to anyone, right? Anyone that, I think a lot of authors that are trying to start out, or illustrators, any creator, usually they have some other way to make an income before they're able to make some kind of money out of the creative process. So I think it's important to find the in-between time in your life and maximize it. So I think that means for me, there are a lot of things that I don't do that I would say are maybe things that can drain your time. So in that in-between time, I might have my phone, but I am trying to come up with ideas, or if there's a area that I'm trying to revise, I'll print manuscripts out and leave it in my car. Or I'll have like a phrase or a line, because a lot of my stuff is very sparse. I really work to get that specific phrasing down. So sometimes there might be two or three spreads I'm trying to like figure out the best way to say it. And I'll just rework them and write a million versions on my phone if I'm sitting in a car line or I'm at a doctor's appointment and you have all that weird downtime. So I really recommend try and find ways to get your art on your phone or on paper with you and use it in that time where you're waiting in line anywhere, any kind of things like that. I also think that having critique partners and deadlines is extremely helpful for me, at least. I know it doesn't work for everyone, but for me, that time pressure really makes the magic happen. And I might have something that's not perfect, but getting it out at all helps me get to the next stage of being able to revise. Because I believe that, for me at least, so much of my writing happens in my brain, in my subconscious, as I'm doing things all day long. So I took a writing class once. It was for middle grade, but the author who was the teacher recommended work on your stuff for like a few minutes in the morning every day, and then it'll sit in your brain all day. And as you're just like driving or walking, things will work. And then the next time you go, it's fresh and you're ready to go. And you've processed a lot in that time where you weren't actively working on it. And so I definitely don't have time to write every day or write when I wake up every day. But I do try to think about, okay, what's the thing I'm trying to solve? Or if I'm working on a new story, what is the thing I'm trying to figure out? And I do let it kind of work in the background of my brain. And I find that when I actually do sit down, I tend to write drafts very quickly because I've done so much prep work, as you mentioned before, all your life experience, but also all the thinking you do beforehand, I think can really help if you're crunched for your actual amount of time you have to sit in your chair. So that's another tip I have. And I also think that goals and boundaries can help as well. So I think that if you can say, you know, I really would love to write 2 picture book manuscripts this year or this month or whatever, then you kind of have a framework and you can try and figure out how to arrange your life to make that happen, whether it's I need to set aside this time on the weekend, or I need to try during my lunch break to do this, or I need to take a class to help me with this. I think it can give you a little bit of help if you're busy to have a little bit of structure. And that also applies to the boundaries. So you can say, you know, I'm not going to binge a Netflix series until I get X task done, or, you know, I'm not going to go scroll on my Instagram every single day. I'm going to set aside a time to go do posts that are related to that, or just things like that, where you can set up boundaries, because there's so many amazing opportunities for, and many of which are free in this kidlit world, right? There's writing contests, there's StoryStorm, which everyone should do. Amazing, coming up soon from Tara Lazar. There's so many things, but you cannot do them all and write new stuff. And so I find that it's helpful to a point, but you need to limit yourself and be able to figure out for you what's the best use of your creative energy in every given month, because it changes when you're going from, I'm trying to get a book, I'm trying to get an agent, and then it'll have a shift where it's like, okay, I have existing books I need to edit, and I have other books I need to write that are being waited on, and now I have time I need to spend creating social media posts. And on top of that, I still need to write new stuff to try and sell for the future. So it's a bit of a balance. And to me, setting out those boundaries was really helpful to try to not be overwhelmed by all of it, especially the social media. I think that it can just take all your time if you let it. And so I haven't quite figured it out yet. My book is only a few months old, but I'm trying to figure out and learn from other authors how they do it. And some people seem to say, you know, I just go and I do things 2 days a week at this time, or they try to schedule that time, because otherwise it can be constant trying to do that. And if you want to make the post look nice, that's even harder. So I would say those are my tips. Oh, and the last one is something we already talked about. Try, if for picture books at least, really like try to embed picture books into your whole life. Like, you know, if you have kids, obviously I read picture books with them, but when we go to the library, I talk about it. And also as an adult, like picture books. At this point, greeting cards are so expensive. I mean, I often make my own greeting cards, but if you don't, if you're buying an $8 greeting card, you can probably buy a picture book on sale for a few dollars more, and they convey the same messages in a way better rereadable way, right? So like think about picture books and board books as gifts and to kind of embed it into your life and think about how picture books can be used as a physical object. And I think that really helps because it's just a part of your, like picture books are a part of your life, you know, and these objects for kids. And the more you use them in interesting ways for snack time, use it for story time, use them as like something you read on a certain day. Even with older kids, picture books could be used in high school too, right? Like find ways to do that. And I think it just seeps through every element of your life.
Wow, that is such great advice, Kelly. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. That was like jam-packed. And it's like stuff that I'm like, oh, it's so fascinating. Just like, I mean, the insight you get from veteran writers like yourself.
I don't know if I'm a veteran, okay? Maybe a little bit.
I mean, you are like, I'm just so amazed by how writers, it's a little bit different than with the mindset of an illustrator, and that you're doing this, like, I love illustration, but it was always kind of like when I first started my career, like many, this is like my second pass, but like the first time, it felt a little like, oh, you wait for somebody to kind of hand you assignment to do this. But authors are naturally prone to be like, I love the process. I'm doing this for myself, whether somebody's handing me a job or not. I'm just going to write this. And that's such a huge leap of faith and bravery, because when you write, like we've talked about how you pull yourself and your life into it, it can be kind of scary and intimidating, because eventually you go and you put that out there, whether on social media or you send it to a literary agent or you send it to an editor. And it's like sometimes like you're putting your heart on a plate and you're sending it off to somebody. You know, it's, to me, I think it's brave.
Well, I really felt that way with iFuel, because every time my critique partners were like, this is amazing. This is it. Like, this is what you need to be sending out. And even though the book touches on alternative fuels and all these things that we're looking for in the world, it talks a lot about oil. And I was so nervous about how many people are just anti-oil, even though it's such a part of our everyday lives, just like container shipping is. The book talks about how our homes get heated and how it helps us drive, and like how different medical devices are made from elements that have been refined in a certain way. And so I believe that in order to get to the future of where we're not having all these emissions and problems that we're having contributing to global warming and climate change, kids need to understand where we're coming from. They need to understand the right now in order to get to the future. And if those kids are going to be the future generation solving these problems, they need to understand where we are, and then they can figure out the innovations to get us to the future. But I was so nervous that no one would even read it, because people know that oil can be problematic, right? And so the story addresses that. But I was nervous, like, this is that personal rejection that you are going to face for something you've worked so hard on, because you have to get people with that hook of your pitch. And if they don't like the pitch, they're not even going to read your story, right? And then your story doesn't even have a chance. So this is where critiques are really nice, if you could do the paid critique, because at least they'll read your whole story. But I was really nervous about that, and how to figure out how to make adults want to read it. I knew it was engaging for kids, and I knew it was there, but I was afraid. So it's a real thing that you go through as a creator. And I think as an artist, you have the benefit of that visual impact right away, right? They can just look at your art and you pick that one piece, but you have to craft those words of a pitch, which is a little bit different, I think, to get that hooked reader to read your whole story.
I'm so happy for you that it all worked out in the end.
Yes, it did.
if you go back in time to your younger self before the book I Ship, I Fuel, and all of that's happened, what's some advice you would give your younger writer self on this journey?
Yes. So I think So for me, as I mentioned, I kind of didn't really do anything like this for a number of years. And I think that even if there isn't much time during different seasons of life that you encounter, whether it's that you're young and you're in undergrad or you're really busy in high school, or if you have children or you're in another career, I think don't let that creative light that you feel you have inside of you go out. Keep it burning and just keep it on low. Like, you're kind of letting it simmer and let those ideas work in your subconscious. And you don't need to be actively writing every day or doing your art every day, because we all know the time consuming element of being a creator, but you can be a creator in your mind all the time. And so I would say just don't let it stop. Kind of like people say, oh, keep your foot in the door with regards to any career. If you're leaving and you want to be able to come back, keep your brain in that creative mindset, even if you're doing something totally different, right? Like, if you're teaching, it could be the complete opposite. You could be an astrophysicist that wants to also paint, and just try and keep the ideas for how you want to paint, what you want to paint in your mind. And I think it will serve you when you want to jump back in, when you have a little bit more time as your life changes.
Wow, that's awesome. That's so encouraging, Kelly. I think I agree with you. It is like we go through different seasons of our lives. And I tell people, whatever age they are, and asking for advice, just be kind to yourself. It's like, there are certain things that are always that are important priorities that, I took time to have my son, and there was a conscious decision that I would be like, I'm taking a break from this art career and focus on him, because he's only going to be little for so long. And so it was, but I love this idea of keeping it low like a flame, that analogy. It's because you're a writer, a critical writer, and you could say it that way. But I love that you just keep that little fire going, because there will be a time when you can focus more energy onto it. That's excellent.
Yeah, thank you. Well, luckily, listeners, Nancy let me know that question in advance. I didn't just come up with that out of the blue. I did have a few minutes to think about it, but it's true. It really is true. So just if you know you're a creative person and you want to get that out in whatever way you do, whatever medium it is, just know that you will have more time at some point in the future than you might feel like you have now. And just keep it going so you're ready. You're ready to jump back in, and it doesn't feel so overwhelming when the time comes.
Excellent advice. Now, is there anyone that you are grateful for on your creative journey that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yes, definitely. So I 100% could not do this without my husband, Michael, and my family, because he really allows me to make that time, especially with our kids. A lot of times he'll help when there are things I want to do related to writing. But also my critique partners here in the Charlotte area. Really, I felt like everything took off when we were able to constantly be meeting and be there for each other. And they really, I feel like writing could be a team sport, and that it is, you have to be your best athlete yourself, but your team really helps get you there, and we bounce things off each other. And so I feel like the further you get along too, that a lot of it is expected of you, and your editors expect things to be really great by the time they even land on their desk. And I couldn't do that without all the back and forth of my critique partners. Lastly, I would say all of these amazing writing opportunities that have just worked for me because I took a chance and entered them. But I mean, it is so much work for these creators that put on these things. So I mentioned earlier StoryStorm, great way to get ideas that Tara Lazar puts on. And there is a mentorship program that I was a part of called PV Chat that no longer exists, but there are other mentorship programs out there. So that was run by many efforts of Justin Colon started it. And then my mentor was Hannah Holt. So these other authors put their time out there to help. And so Hannah helped me make iFuel great to the point where it's sold as a second book. So I'm really grateful to them, and all the other free contests out there that people like you and I, who are really busy already with our families and with our writing and our creating, are going out there to make other opportunities to help other writers. So that's just amazing part of this Kidlit community that I think really helps support and foster everyone. And 12 by 12 is in there too. That one you do have to pay for, but I feel like that's another really great community for, especially for picture book creators, to really just share the love in a world that could be so competitive, right? Everyone knows that they could be working on a book about the same topic and everyone still supports you. I just feel like that positivity helps you keep going when things get hard. So very grateful at this end of year when we're thinking about those kind of things.
Wonderful. Now, this is a podcast and I don't do video. So where can people find more about you and your books?
Yes. So my website is kellyriceschmidt.com. It has more about me. There's a lot of fun things on there about when I was a kid. So there's some cool old pictures of me if you're an educator using my book. There's also some free links on there to the activity guide for iShip and some other free things on there, as well as links to buy my books and contact me. And I'm also on social media at K.R. Schmidt Writes. So I'd say I post more on Instagram than anywhere else, but I also have Facebook and X, I think we're on now, but transitioning away from that. I'm also on all of the other kidlit ones. I'm on Blue Sky and Threads as well, but it is a lot to be spread thin on social media these days. So I'd say most consistently I try to post things on Instagram because luckily I have a lot of great art that I like to share from Jam as she's been creating things for my books. And that way you get to see peeks into the creative life visually as well.
Well, thank you, Kelly. And thank you, everybody, for listening to My Creative Life. Bye.
Thanks, Nancy.